The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are talking about Season 6, Episode 1, Smoke Signals. And of course, I'm not alone. I'm joined by someone who loves the fat sound of thousands of guinea pigs being shoved into a wood chipper, Stuart! How are you?
Haunts my nightmares, the idea of that. It's horrendous. Guinea pigs do not, they should not make noise. They are silent little creatures who need to be protected at all costs. Mm-hmm. They're one of those like weird animals that obviously would never exist out in the wild, right? Like
they would die instantly, I think.
Yeah.
Like a fox would eat them all.
So why would you throw them in the wood chip? That's horrible.
I mean, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why I would never get married at this venue, at least on that day. Monstrous. Yeah. But we'll get into it. We're talking about the premiere of Season 6. Stuart, we're back. We're back, baby. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to see that like this essentially picks back up pretty much right where we left off at the end of Season 5?
Quite. I thought we might get like a bit of a time skip or anything. Nope. Moira's still in the closet. Still having a breakdown. I don't know why I expected anything different.
Yeah. Thoughts on the premiere overall before we dive deep into it?
Okay. Might be controversial here.
Oh, no.
Not strongest. It was good. Don't get me wrong, but not the strongest. Like, I feel like we've had stronger season openers.
See, and I was about to come on and say, I think this is the best season opener we've had.
Well, like, we can argue about it. Great. We've got conflict for the podcast. Fantastic.
I just think that we always usually come on here for the premiere of a season and say like, it's like they're really good at finales. They're not known for being good at premieres. And this one, I don't know. I kind of enjoy all of the storylines that we get here. So I don't know. I guess we'll talk about it.
I think I've just been spoiled because last season we had the crowning. Like how that is the tip top tier.
That's the top tier one. Yeah.
Yeah. But like perhaps I'm judging it a bit harshly because it was a good episode, don't get me wrong. Like found myself laughing, enjoyed it. I think we got some goodish progression, some setup for maybe like what's coming this season. Mm-hmm. It was also really good to get it to go back to like just David and Alexis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in terms of like that vibe.
So here's where I think I stand on it. In terms of season premieres, I think how I would currently just rank them overall. I think I would put Finding David as number one. That's the season two opening where they have to go find David. Love that one. Then I think I would put The Crowning second, which mm-hmm. is last season's season premiere, season five. Then I would put this one, Smoke Signals, at third place. And then it's kind of the rest, in my opinion. So you have like the series premiere, our cup run over, opening night, and Dead Guy in Room 4. I think Dead Guy in Room 4 is probably my least favorite of all of those.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. At least like opening night had Jake and that for a bit of eye candy at that point. And he wasn't that much of a douchebag at that point. So could somewhat be admired as part of that. But yeah, Dead Guy in Room 4, that was probably...
It was very cringe. So I think that's probably my least favorite. Probably the series premiere is second to last, just because there's a lot they have to do in that time. So there's a lot of exposition more so than like super funny stuff. But yeah, so this one probably actually is more middle of the pack. I just was like enjoying my time with it, which is maybe why I was a little bit higher on it in general, because I just had a good time with this episode.
Yeah, I think also there is a slight possibility that perhaps my expectations are being built up a little bit too high because of having to wait 2 weeks to watch it. This is the last time ever I had to do it.
Yeah.
I no longer have to wait for Schitt's Creek.
Nope, you'll never have to wait again. There you go. Week to week, you'll have to wait, but not 2 weeks.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so. no more 2 week waits.
All right, well, let's talk about the actual plot of the episode here as I give a quick little recap. We kick off the season with Moira still in the closet, having a meltdown over the shelving of the Crows movie. She doesn't remain there long, though, as a fire in the motel, of course started by Roland, has her clawing her way out and questioning her career choices. She decides she's finished with show business, but is show business finished with her? Decidedly not. Moira and Johnny decide to do a little skinny dipping in the creek, which is the first time they've actually visited the creek in Schitt's Creek, which is fairly funny, when Moira gets word that the Crows movie has been picked up by a new streaming service named Interflix. Johnny nearly gets arrested by a cop who, I will just note, is also breaking the law. Just need to throw that out there because. And Moira is newly invigorated to continue her love affair with showbiz. Meanwhile, David and Patrick are touring a wedding venue, but experience sticker shock when they see the cost of their perfect day. The only way they can afford it is by having the wedding a month from now, which doesn't work because Alexis will be in the Galapagos Islands. Well, she would be if she had booked her flight for the correct day. Apparently, the flight follows UK date standards with the day before the month, so Alexis won't be leaving until August. But the wedding venue won't be working out regardless, as that special discounted price only exists because it's the one day a month when the nearby farm processes its meat. And we're all horrified by the sounds that ensue. We leave the episode with Patrick proposing the wedding be held in the yard of the motel. And that's our episode, Stuart.
Good episode. Like I've said, like not a bad one in the slightest. How do we want to do this, Jess? Do we want to like actually go through the plots, or do we want to get the date format argument out of the way first?
I think we need to do that first, because I knew this was going to be a thing. After I watched this episode, I was like, oh, Jesus, we are really opening up a can of worms. For those who aren't aware, I don't know about the rest of the world. All as I know is US and UK. In the US, the general format when you're doing the numerical date is month, day, year. In the UK, it is day, month, year. And I will concede defeat, as I have done many a time, in that the UK does it right. Like, it makes way more sense to go small to big, not medium, small, big. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why we do it this way.
It sounds phonetically a little better, like July 4th. Because
you say March,
whatever.
Yeah, sounds you say March, whatever, than... yeah.
Yeah, like
the 4th of July. I mean, we do say that it is a holiday.
Oh, wait, yeah, like, that's a really bad example.
But like, you could say like the 10th of August or whatever. Like, you could do that. It's just generally more common to say August 10th than the 10th of August.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, like, it's something that I always get frustrated about. But I looked it up actually. I was like, what's like Canada's take on this? And I think Canada is like date, month, month, hence the joke. But officially, Canadian government is year, month, date, which is, as an IT guy.
So that's the opposite.
Yeah, but it does make most sense. And I think it's the same for like Japan or Korea or some country, because it's like, yeah, because if you think about like ordering files or something like that, it'll always be in like, if you order by like alphabetically and like numerically as well, like top to bottom, then it will always be in order. Whereas if you go like date, month, year, it's never in order. So that makes the most sense.
Yeah, but, like, I'm looking. Gonna...
get around that with like how people talk, because no one says, well,
the year first, everyone knows. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it looks like in the, so the US, we said month, day, year. European nations, day, month, year. I guess a lot of Asian nations are year, month, day, like mm-hmm. you were saying with maybe Canada. So I don't know. It's very confusing. It's also silly, but it, of course, is perfect for a sitcom to play yeah. with this. To have this be, and apparently have it not be the first time that Alexis has made this mistake,
that
which
was
is even
the
better.
Best part, the fact that like David mm-hmm. instantly knew that was the issue, and recognized yeah. it, and it was like called her out there immediately. This was the kind of thing that I'd been kind of wanting for and been pining for a bit, because what with David getting with Patrick and like Alexis getting with Ted and then going off and doing their own different things, I've kind of missed just them being siblings and having arguments in the motel, and this was like bringing it all back to that. So I was like, I really appreciated mm-hmm. that, because the way in which it was brought up was just so funny, and just Alexis trying to hide it and just failing miserably.
It's incredible. It feels very true to life. Like I've always said, they do, this sibling relationship feels extremely realistic to have mm-hmm. them bickering. Mainly because they're going to miss each other. Like, of course, it's going to hurt David's feelings that Alexis is basically like, oh, I can't wait to get out of here. But the reason Alexis is saying that is because she's skeptical of going. Like, she's nervous about leaving, and she feels yeah. like she needs to pump herself up. And so kind of having that be the reason that they're not getting along very well right now makes all the sense in the world. And then of course, Alexis makes a mistake and she can't bear to even think about telling David the truth. So she hugs him and does all this stuff. And she's like, of course, David. And then the move where the hand on the face is like one step too far for David. And he mm-hmm. pulls her hand off and he's like, what's going on? He knows yeah, immediately knows. Something is up. Yeah. It's perfect.
I like that it doesn't really come with, like, it comes with a question, but it doesn't come with an outright accusation. But he knows what button to press just by going, yeah, let's call that cab. And it's like, oh, it all comes tumbling down. And yeah. bless Patrick just going along with all this, just being an absolute hero for the whole thing.
He was wearing green this episode, which was very strange.
I did notice. And
but his pants were rather tight.
I noticed that as well. Such perverts. But I was like, God, the donk is donking today.
The donk was real donking real hard. Yeah, it was working overtime, that donk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I really like the story. I love the story of Alexis like being jealous. She wants to go see the venue. And then Patrick not really knowing what he's agreeing to by being like, oh yeah, and we'll also drop you off at the airport. To the point where I'm pretty sure, I'm fairly certain Patrick drives a Toyota Corolla, as I used to drive one and my husband still drives one. And the fact that she has so much luggage that they have to tie it to the roof is like wild. Like, I mean, obviously it's a small sedan, so it's not going to fit everything, but damn girl, that's a lot of luggage.
How's she going to move it when she gets there? Like, is she going to be dumping stuff at the airport? Is she going to be one of those tragic people that has to like really kind of make some real life choices about what to keep and what
she's
to throw?
She's paying a lot of money in baggage fees, and she's yeah. going to be the one that has like those carts after you get off the plane and you have to cart all your luggage around, you know, that's mm-hmm. usually reserved for like families and people with kids. She's gonna need one of those, and she's gonna be struggling if she's wearing those high heels too.
That was one of my Damn. Favorite things when I was a kid going to the airport. It's just like the luggage would get piled up and then I would sit on top like a king and just be wheeled through the airport.
Cool.
Yeah,
King Stewart, of course, everyone.
Of yeah. course,
of course. So yeah, so now we have a reason for Alexis to be in town for another month. Is the flight was wrong. She can't change the flight. It's not like she's made of money, so she can't exactly just afford to get another ticket. So she's going to be hanging around for the next month, mm-hmm. which is great because then she could be more involved in the planning process for Patrick and David's wedding.
This is great.
Yeah.
I think, like, use her skills. Like, she's got these skills and she's being, like, shown to be really good at it. Like, Alexis should be the one that is being tapped out for this. Like, her and David together, why the hell are they not like doing wedding stuff already? Like they would
oh,
seem
yeah.
like
party
really
planning.
Good wedding planners. Yeah.
Yeah. 1,000%. I'm thinking about, like, they're really good tag team. Like, thinking the whole Dress Barn thing, even though Alexis was mostly there as like a support, I think they'd be really great working together if they can get along, which they usually can. I do think they're just very effective. What really didn't surprise me at all was hearing that Patrick has not been involved at all in the wedding planning, that David has not really allowed him to be involved at all. It is I love Patrick being like, listen, I know you've kind of taken it upon yourself, but this is great. This is beautiful. Like, that was very nice. I love Patrick.
If David's happy, he's happy. And I was like, that's kind of adorable in his own little way. Yeah. I kind of get the thing that, like, Patrick's going to be particular about certain things, but like the venue is something that he knows that he's going to possibly lose on anyway, and it's probably not worth doing it. But it's also one of those things that maybe they just, it just works because that's just something that he doesn't care about, but David clearly does care about, because they only got engaged, was it a week ago? Because they had the wrap party for Cabaret. I want to say, I don't know why I'm imagining Cabaret has been running for a week.
That's kind of what I figured, because they did the wrap party. Stevie got so drunk and didn't wipe her makeup off. That's how we know it's only been like maybe a week or so.
Yeah.
It can have been, because I think Alexis had said she was leaving a week after Ted, right? So that
That's probably where that's come in. Yeah. So they've run Cabaret. They've had the wrap party. Next day they're doing this. So within 1 week, David is already lining up wedding venues to go to and see. That's a lot.
See, gosh, it really, as someone who has been involved in wedding planning process and everything, it really can go a couple of different ways. It all depends on how long you want to be engaged for, how big the wedding is, obviously, and then when you want your wedding to be. Because if you are looking to get a very hot venue that is very popular in a popular time of year, on a popular day, like a Saturday, you're going to need to look at it early. You're going to need to commit very early to that venue. Like, I'm talking, obviously, it depends on where you live and all of that stuff, right? Everything, all of that's a factor. Sometimes a year and a half, sometimes more, 2 years. Like,
what?
It's, you have to lock in early. And this is no joke, Stuart. Like, we got engaged in April, and I think had a wedding or a venue lined up by May for the following October, I think. Now, obviously, COVID following? Changed a lot. Not a year and a half later. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but again, that's for like a larger wedding with, you know, it all depends. But the thing that I connected with just so deeply on such a deep emotional level that I wanted to scream was the fact that it is super common for wedding venues to not divulge their pricing online. Like, it is, that is a true thing that happens. And it is so frustrating because you don't know. You have no idea. And a lot of times, most places, if they're including the food in the venue and in the wedding, like I presume this place was, just given that the food is coming from the local farm and all that. Yeah. It's usually an amount per head. So per person. And you never know what that amount is going to be. Like, it is so supremely frustrating. So I can imagine their frustration. Obviously, you see this place and you're like, dollar signs, right? You're like, this is going to cost a pretty penny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is very frustrating, and it can be very disheartening to find a location that you love, have no idea what the cost will be until you waste your time meeting with them all to find out you can't afford it. It's really, really frustrating. Wedding planning is extremely stressful. I count my lucky stars every day, not for COVID, but for that being the reason that we ended up having a very, very small wedding as opposed to the 150-ish probably person thing we were going to have. Listen, we both have very large families. when your nuclear family is very small and you are the first wedding in that nuclear family, there's a lot of like, and your parents are both the youngest on their side. It's like, there's a lot of like, everyone else has had their time to shine. It's very difficult. Again, it all depends on there's no one right or wrong way to do anything in a wedding, but a lot of people end up in this scenario where they feel an immense amount of pressure. Luckily for them, for David and Patrick. I can't imagine this being a huge affair. I mean, you have to imagine a lot of the town is invited. They're very integrated into the town now. Mm-hmm. But in terms of size of families, I can't imagine it's super huge.
No, not at all, really. Unless David is going to go a bit wild and invite a lot of old contacts. Like, because, I mean, if I was David, I don't want to, like, bring everyone from my past and, yeah, rub it in their face and be like, look, bagged him. Go F yourself. Like, Sebastian's even getting an invite for that reason, I imagine. I don't know. Like, it's a weird thing of, like, I imagine drawing up a guest list for a wedding must be a nightmare.
There's the question of where do you cut it off? Like, in terms of your family, well, do you cut it off at first cousins? Do you cut it off at aunts and uncles? Do you cut it off by generation? Or do you play favorites and say, well, I'm super close with this person, but I haven't talked to this mm-hmm. person in 5 years. I know specifically with my family, that was a bit of a contentious issue where I said, well, if I haven't seen a person in 5 years, I really don't care if they come or not. That was not very cool with my family. They wanted to invite by like generation, basically. And of course, then you get into the question of, well, who's paying for it? Because if people are contributing money, they're going to feel like they have a say in whatever you want to do.
I'm not cool with that. I know it's a thing.
It's just it's the way it is. Yeah. It's very difficult. And so on one hand, like David and Patrick are lucky in that it doesn't seem like this will be the hugest wedding ever. But David is still David, and David is going to want something very high end, very expensive looking. But they have a very small budget. I mean, they own their own business. It's not like they have tons and tons of money just lying around. And Stuart, if I had to guess, Patrick has some fairly tight purse strings when it comes to a wedding. You know, I could picture Patrick being the type of guy who says, who cares about the wedding? It's about the marriage. Like, that's just how I feel he would react. He's like, he's a budget conscious king. And so I think he's going to have to rein David in a little bit in terms of that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there's a loosening of the kind of like the leash in terms of like going off to spend in some areas, but like still there's a firm grip being held for when it like unravels. I think it was a good measure that like even David balked at the prices and wasn't kind of doing the whole but it's our wedding and like forcing that to be a kind of thing, which I think was a really good sign. Patrick is 100% a budget conscious king and like is absolutely gonna like kind of
we love that about him.
I think he's the practical one in the relationship. Like he's the serious one. He's the grown-up. And I don't know, like his suggestion at the end, I think like comes about from, I think his mindset of like, perhaps like kind of just thinking budget consciously, but I think also just kind of seeing things that David doesn't see, like seeing the beauty in the motel like situation and seeing the fact that like they're sat there enjoying a really lovely kind of like family barbecue, like it's eating al fresco kind of situation. And he's like, look, you're happy here. Let's perhaps do it here. And also lending into David's ego, but also skills. It'd be like, you could make it look really good as well. Oh, loved that. So much.
I'm with you, especially because think about it, right? Like the first time, if I'm remembering correctly, Patrick had a meal with David's family. It also was a barbecue at the motel. And like, that was the first time he really, but it was messy, but I agree with you. And it also has the added benefit of if they're going to dress up the motel, clean up the motel anyway for the wedding, well, maybe it helps them get more business down the line, right? If they're really going to be doing some revamping, like it's a business cost. You can write it off, right? Write it off.
Yeah.
So I do think, and we did look into the idea of a backyard sort of a wedding with the tent and tables and all that. The problem is that a lot of people think that is like an economical way to have a wedding, and it can be, but those sorts of rentals where you're renting a tent and table and chairs and all of that stuff really does add up as well. And so that gets expensive, especially if you don't want to be the one setting all of it up and taking all of it down. Like you're talking about workers, it can get really expensive, but I will say it can be gorgeous. Like if you have the right tent with lighting and like, if you do all of that right and the set, the table settings and all that, you can really dress that kind of a thing up and make it look expensive.
Honestly, well-placed fairy lights can set a whole scene. Like, you and I are big fans of The Last of Us Part 2.
Yes.
That barn dance, I'm like, fairy lights, consider me done. This is picturesque as fuck.
Yeah.
It's a blank canvas, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the kind of selling point, is that, like, while the stately home that they kind of go and see, or the venue kind of that's specifically for that, is really lovely, it's still something that they're kind of slotting themselves into. Whereas I think this, like, possibility of like hosting in the garden makes so much more sense, because it is a blank canvas where David can express himself through like kind of exactly how he wants it to be, but it's also deeply personal as well. It is a thing that costs are gonna like potentially jump up, but I can see the whole town possibly chipping in a little bit.
That's
with, like,
the other
stuff.
Thing
and it really has the whole community aspect of it, which I think is the whole message of this show thus far, is about these people kind of learning to love this place a little bit, or at least appreciate it, maybe not love it.
We'll
never get quite that far, but
I do think it's a really solid option for them. I love that. Of course, it's Patrick is the one who thinks of this, right? Like, he has the idea because it's sentimental, and David could really put his stamp on it, really dress it up and make it their, you know, their own. That's kind of where they end up leaving things. Alexis isn't leaving for another month to go to the Galapagos, so that is going to get delayed. Before we jump over to the Moira and Johnny stuff, I want to like stop down on Stevie for a second, because she does have a tiny moment this episode. It's not a ton, but there is a moment when she's trying to compliment Alexis by being like, you know, you're brave. You're the one who's going out and seeing the world. And after Cabaret is now over, like, you know, what do you think of where Stevie's mind is at right now, Stuart?
She must be feeling a little high on everything and like having achieved something like Cabaret. But I think as well, there is that sense of like Alexis is off doing stuff. And I can see where she is feeling that like sense of push and pull a little bit, in that she has this urge, or at least this feeling that she might need to be doing this, because that's how you broaden the horizons. But she isn't doing it. So like there's, I don't know. It's a strange one. I kind of see her as having, been awakened, but not really done much with the information just yet, and doesn't really know what to do because she's a bit directionless. And I'm hoping that she kind of finds something of a direction from it. And I hope this isn't like a lingering feeling for her, but like I do get that sense that she's a bit like she needs someone to kind of point her in the right way. I don't know.
Yeah. It really feels like this, her doing Cabaret opened her eyes to a whole side of herself that she didn't really know existed, right? Like she's been more bold. She's willing to take risks now, but she doesn't really know what risks to take, where to go from here. Because we don't know. She doesn't really mention here. Is it acting, right? Is it the fact that she was on stage for a live performance? Like that breathe new life into her. She doesn't really say. It's more so that she has just now realized that like maybe Schitt's Creek isn't, she has more potential than just staying in Schitt's Creek forever. And Cabaret opened her eyes to that, but she doesn't really know what to do with that information. And I mean, also literally we know Cabaret wrapped last night. Like this is not like it's been a month after the show is over. It literally wrapped last night. So she's just kind of coming down from the high of that, I think. But definitely interesting to note it, because it is a very small moment that I almost like, you almost miss it in the episode, because it's while Alexis is trying to figure out her flight and really not even paying attention to what Stevie's saying. But it does feel important to note that, like, you know, we ranked her our favorite character last season. She had the biggest arc last season. So how do we follow that up in the next season?
Yeah, I'm so unsure about how they're gonna do that justice, really. And I kind of hope it doesn't like kind of jump from Stevie and be like, okay, well, we've done Stevie stuff, let's move on to someone else. Or like kind of let's go back to like kind of how things were a little bit where Stevie was kind of getting a little bit kind of like shut off to the side. It's going to be a difficult one for them to do properly. And I like the fact that they've thrown in this small, even a small little thing with Stevie, because I think that was something that kind of came about from last season, is that Stevie's stuff, yeah, towards the end, she had some big, like big scenes in terms of like time and also kind of like impressiveness. But also it was these small little nuggets that were kind of teased quite early on with things. And like, yeah, the Amir story was quite a big thing, but still we kind of got this urge that Stevie was feeling a little kind of like left out and a little left behind over the course of things. And so maybe I can see this as a reset of that whole process, is that we're going to like get this small little tease into kind of like what Stevie's stuff could be. I don't know what I want for her though. Like, I don't want Stevie to go anywhere. Like, I don't want any of them to go anywhere. I'm distraught that Ted's in the Galapagos, like, at the moment. Like, Ted, come back. Mm-hmm. Like, I want you all to just hang out here at least like the entire season. Like, I don't want any of you to bugger off anymore. But
equally, Roland can bugger off though.
No,
he started a fire.
Okay, I'm gonna jump onto this. They're called toaster pops. They go in the toaster. I'm sorry, it is outrageous that they are not to be toasted.
This feels like Pop-Tarts. Like, they're, have we talked about it on this podcast? Was it a different podcast? Truly, I don't know. And who cares at this point?
I don't think we've talked about Pop-Tarts.
Oh, you know what? It was a different podcast, I think, because Todd had, like, never had a Pop-Tart, which I thought was just the craziest thing I'd ever heard.
Crazy.
You haven't eaten a Pop-Tart? Do you have Pop-Tarts over there?
We have Pop-Tarts. I don't think I'll ever eat one of them.
Well, you've kind of like missed the boat. Like, the best part is when you're a kid and you eat one. Like,
right
now it's like, I don't know.
They look horrendous.
Well, of course they do. Children eat them. What do you mean? Well, everyone eats them. I'm not trying to say adults can't eat. We literally have Pop-Tarts in our house right now. But the point is, I was always very staunchly like, you don't need to toast it. Like, it's raw dog, a Pop-Tart. It's so good. You don't need to toast it.
Is it uncooked pastry, or is it just like,
no, it's just like sugar, whatever. Yeah, you're just heating it up. My favorite as a child was the s'mores flavor. I still really do enjoy the s'mores flavor. I also am a big fan of the brown sugar cinnamon. That is what I would recommend. If you've never eaten a Pop-Tart, I would probably recommend brown sugar cinnamon to anyone who hadn't.
Do you ever watch the Bon Appetit YouTube channel before it got fully cancelled and everyone quit?
I don't think so. Is that the one with the guy who eats a lot of food, or is that someone else?
That different thing altogether. Okay. So Bon Appetit, the food magazine, and they had a YouTube channel, incredibly white, incredibly kind of insular, and incredibly problematic by the sounds of it. But the YouTube content was gold up until that, and there's a season, series on it called Gourmet Makes, and this.
Oh, chef, so they would make gourmet versions of like shitty foods. Okay,
and it was Claire Saffitz, and she's a fantastic chef, and she would lose her mind trying to make these things.
Yeah,
Debbie's. Yeah, so like first day, and she'd read all the ingredients. Like, there'd be like 300 different chemicals that you don't need and stuff. She'd be like, okay, well, this is just four elements. How difficult could it be? And then famous last words, 3 days in, she's crying into a microwave going, why do I have to temper chocolate? It's fantastic. But she does try to make Pop-Tarts, and those are one of the more successful ones, because I think
because it's a toaster pastry. It's not like,
pastry jam, pastry,
yeah, pockets and put stuff. Shit in there. It's great.
Yeah, but she like goes to the extent of like making her own sprinkles and stuff like that. It's wild.
Why? Okay, I just draw the line at certain things.
Gourmet.
No, like, there's just a certain point you reach where it's like, you are now wasting your time. And sprinkles, hardcore, you are just wasting time. Like, who in the world has time to make sprinkles? I don't. Read a book.
Read a book.
Yeah, truly.
Claire Saffitz, read a book.
If you're making sprinkles, you need to touch grass. Like, that's unhinged behavior. Sprinkles are so small. Like, what do you, you might as well be making like a dollhouse for mice. Like, at that point, like, what are we doing here? You know, truly.
Fair point. Fair point. But yeah, would highly recommend that. But that's same. Like kind of, I think the most amount of Pop-Tarts knowledge I ever would have had, aside from eating one, which I've never done.
And they sell them in the grocery store and you never have had one. What did you grow up eating like as a child in your childhood? Like, what was breakfast?
Like cereal.
I mean, it's just as bad for you as Pop-Tarts.
Oh yeah, it really is.
Sugar milk.
Especially like, yeah, because I was like, I had Frosties, which you call Frosted Flakes over there, which are like the worst ones.
Frosted.
They're just cornflakes and sugar.
Yeah.
The other ones we had were Sugar Puffs, which was like this puffed rice.
Okay.
Not like Rice Krispies.
Like honeycombs or whatever the hell?
But it was covered in honey as well. Yeah. What are they that actually made from? I want to say it's rice. It's like grain.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wheat puffs with a dash of honey. It was dripping in honey. And yeah. So addictive. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
so you mentally pop tarts at that point, truly. Okay, so we're ready to let's talk about the fire situation, Moira, and all that. We are just, I don't even know where we are.
I'm saying is it's not Roland's fault for starting the fire. That's bad. That's bad product.
The minute you see it smoking, like, you should unplug.
The minute you see it smoking, it's already on fire. There's no smoke without fire, Jess.
I don't know. I just don't trust Roland. But Moira is locked in the closet when all of this is going down. And I never noticed this on any of my other rewatches, but one of my favorite, what's it called? Like continuous gags is that Moira does not recognize the voices of literally anyone around her every single time. It's like, oh, Stevie, and it's Roland. Like, it's just perfect.
So hilarious. I love the slow realization when it, like, she kind of comes to the realization that things are on fire. It's like, what was it, David? I told you not to wear that smoky cologne.
Yeah, it's perfect. So Roland ends up being the one to save her. He carries her out, and then she's flipping out because her ladies, her wigs, her girls, he needs to save them too. And I will talk about it when we get to the wig watch, but like, her out front with just clutching onto her wigs in that maniacal wig is just everything. Let's do it now, because look at this. This is a picture of a woman who has lost it.
It's the fact that she comes, like, the outfit with it, I don't know why, just backs it up as well. It's like this Wednesday Addams-esque, like, kind of like dress, and she like stumbles out on all fours. It's the funniest image.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it whatsoever. It's like, I don't even know the context of it, but when I saw this episode, I sent you the whole Danny DeVito in a similar wig kind of gift. What is it about this look that is just so unhinged? I don't get it.
It's the blunt bang mixed with like the fact that it's kind of Albert Einstein-y, the shocking white of the wig. The fact that she's speaking in like riddles, I could not get the transcript to load for this episode, but my favorite is when Roland has absolutely no clue what the hell she's saying. And it's just... it's everything. I'm pretty sure I sent you this picture earlier today and I said, hang it in the Louvre. It's just like, it's everything. So Moira's really going through it. She's having a bit of a mentee bee. And she decides then and there that she is done with show business because show business seems to be done with her. And poor Johnny. Poor Johnny gets so whiplashed this episode because he is so thrilled. Like, you can see it on his face. Yeah. He's like, thank God.
Like, oh, it's over. But then saying that, has her career really brought that much of a downside? Yeah, it like brings out her extremities of like her craziness, like what with the all I can think of is Bert Herflinger and that whole like situation of like her crisis of confidence, but that's because it had been a while. And like the crowning, like she was going on and on about it quite a bit, but like I don't think it's been that dreadful, is it? Is it just that he just wants to spend more time with her, in which case that's kind of sweet.
I view it as Moira, I don't think her goal was to like be the biggest soap star around. I think she always wanted more. And I feel like she feels underappreciated, that she never quite reached her potential. Yeah. And so I think, and being Moira and a tad dramatic, I think she is just pointing out that like, I have put so much of myself and my life and everything else on hold to put everything into this career, and it hasn't exactly treated me kindly. And then this is kind of like the final straw for her. For Johnny, I think it is, I think he's tired of seeing her have these breakdowns when things don't work out. And I think he just wants her to be happy. And so I think he would rather she move on, right? He would rather her find something like he found the motel. Kind of find something new that she is like cabaret, right? Like find something to put her energy into that is fulfilling and not going to end up with her having a mental breakdown in the closet.
Yeah.
You know,
I can see that. I still see the cabaret thing as being the same, like a different, but the same kind of like,
at least it's local though, right? Like she's not flitting off to like, I forget where the hell she even went for the Crows movie, but like Bosnia, but like, it's she's not flying all over the place, right? Because when she was gone, let's not forget, Johnny was really upset. Like he was really depressed. He really missed her. I think he doesn't want that life anymore. I think he wants her to be local with him. And let's face it, like they are retirement age. Like she could be done working. And I think he would be happy if she was. But I think the lovely thing about Johnny is he's very supportive no matter what. It's what Moira wants that's always key for him. Mm-hmm. I think he's just excited at the prospect of like, Moira says, let's go have a picnic. Let's go have lunch. Like,
yeah,
that's all he wants.
Yeah, he's been like the whole situation of moving to Schitt's Creek has made Johnny appreciate having the family around. Like, he's been the one that's thrived because of it. Like, he loves having them all around.
He says he's so happy to have Alexis around for another month at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. You know, like he loves keeping them close to him now. And not let's not forget also, Moira's job took her away from her family a lot. Like she was not as available. And I think that I think Johnny is kind of done and over it and done with like Moira calling him from the set, having a meltdown, right? Like this job is very stressful on Moira's emotions. And whenever Moira is having a stressful time, it is coming back to Johnny for Johnny to try to handle and manage. And he'll do it because he loves her. I think he doesn't want her to be unhappy. And there are times when this career, it's the highest of highs and the lowest of lows for Moira.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I what do you think about like her going back to it then? It didn't take much. Like, she jumped.
No, of course not.
Back in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Immediately. And I think that's a sign of like, well, she, you know, she wasn't really done with it. She was having a tough day, like any of us, where it's like, oh, I'm done. I'm finished. I'm never doing this again. And it's like, okay, it's a lot of bluster without actually meaning it. And why would she be done? Like, it'd be different if she was like called up and offered another small role in something that may or may not even succeed. This is something she already put her heart and soul into that is now being taken over by another company to possibly perform well. Why would she say no to that?
Yeah, that makes more sense. Like, it is less of a like kind of jumping back in, starting from the ground up, like kind of going for another audition. Like just hearing the good news that Great Advice has been picked up by someone. It was not too much of a jumping back in. It's just more, okay, we're back on this train and we'll see where it goes kind of situation. Which makes a bit more sense. I hope it does really well though. Like, surely, like, and this is so meta, like, clearly they're making joke about like the whole Netflixification.
Interflix,
like,
the show's popular.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I imagine it's going to go well. I think I made the prediction it would be
have a cult following is what you said. Yeah.
Maybe
I mean, there's always that possibility, right? Like when it's getting picked up by any place, there's always a chance. And I think Moira has lived her entire career with, so you're saying there's a chance, you know? I just feel bad that it comes at the expense of Johnny here. where they're going to go skinny dipping in the creek and they're going to have like a very fun time together. And he literally gets caught with his pants down in the creek, gets chastised by a cop who is also breaking the law. Might I add,
who would have thought the police would be breaking the law? Who saw that coming?
I was so mad. I was so mad. He's like, I was just fishing where I shouldn't have been. Well, then get out of here.
ACAB is all I'm going to say. ACAB.
I'm right there with you.
What
do they call them in Canada? Scary. Mounties?
No. Aren't they different? Aren't they like horse police or something?
Yeah. What are cops called in Canada? I feel so bad now. It's a constables. What? Oh, yeah, they are Mounties because it's Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They're the ones with the horses.
That's why they're called Mounties. I thought it was Mountains. But yeah, Mounted Police makes much more sense.
Yeah. Mounties. They're in the red.
Yeah,
whereas our cops are traditionally more in like blue-gray colors here.
Yeah.
What color do your cops wear?
Black. Yeah, we used to wear the old policeman's helmets that had like this like dome.
The puffy things on them?
No, that's the
Royal Guard or whatever.
Guards. Yeah,
they're not allowed to smile.
Desk and hats. They're not allowed to smile now.
Why aren't they allowed to smile?
Because they're doing a job. They're protecting
Everyone hates their job. We can't smile. Give us a little bit of fun throughout the day.
Those uniforms are absurd. Like they're now, I think they've now finally switched from it actually being bearskin to like some vegan alternative. So thankfully they're not light skin and stuff, but like they're so hot and they make them do these like military parades like every single day and stuff, and people like fall down and like die and stuff. They don't die, but like they collapse.
The exhaustion, yeah, that's a real thing.
Yeah, exactly. But deviated. The police, on the other hand, no, they wear like these like almost like helmets that go up. It's like an egg shaped thing. They're really strange looking. Yeah.
Oh, those hats. Yeah. They almost, in my opinion, look like polo, like if you're on a horse. Like they kind of look like that.
More height though.
Oh yeah, taller. Definitely taller. Yeah. They look so silly. Silly. How are you gonna take them seriously?
Old school British police, honestly, they had a look to them. Like they tailored like decent car outfits. Like they look pretty like dapper. Police now, they just wear high vis and they just run around with tasers. Just
what's a hiver?
Huh? A high vis. The like fluorescent.
Oh, the vests. The vests. Okay, now I know. Also, how did I get to this mental thought? It's already been a few minutes since I had it and I didn't want to forget. Were we talking about like dream jobs? Did someone say dream job at some point?
No, we went to like Mounties.
You know what it was? It was I was talking about not being able to smile as the Royal Guard.
Right.
So this season on Big Brother, there's this clip that's gone not very viral, but a little viral very early on of this one guy, because they're all meeting each other, you know, learning things about each other. And someone asks this guy, Jimmy, oh, what's your dream job? And he says, and I quote, I don't have a dream job. I don't dream of labor. My dream job is a trust fund.
Iconic. Totally agree.
Put it on a sweatshirt.
I don't dream of labor. That's incredible.
Yes, sir. Anyway.
Subscribe.
So poor Johnny gets caught by the freaking police. And
fishing where he shouldn't be fishing, but then Johnny is naked where he shouldn't be naked, which is in public.
Sure. But like, I feel like there should be a difference between indecent exposure in the middle of a city on the street corner with everyone able to see what you got going on and like a remote creek with absolutely no one around. Like, is it the biggest deal in the world?
How did he know then if Johnny was in the water, unless that water is incredibly clear?
Yeah.
How did he know that it was indecent exposure?
I don't know. Johnny did say something about like there being algae and he needed the fishing line to help him get up. I was imagining he wasn't that deep in yet, like that he wasn't underwater yet, that he was just slip sliding around naked as the day he was born.
Johnny just arse up like in the rocks.
That's
like,
what I was picturing. That's not really that I'm trying to picture Johnny naked, but like that's what I imagined happened.
Gosh.
I don't know. Creeks can vary in terms of the depth, you know, like the creek behind us is not deep. Like, it is a few feet maximum.
Would you want to wade into Schitt's Creek, though?
I will say, again, it very probably not, if that's the name of it. Varies from creek to creek. There are some really lovely creeks that probably have some really nice fresh running water. Ours behind us, more like a swamp, not so much like a creek.
Swamp. But,
what do you call it?
No, I just wanted to say swamp.
Swamp. So yeah, that's what's going on with Moira and Johnny. And it does seem like, yeah, she's back in on the crowning.
Yeah. So, which I think is good. I'm glad that wasn't just thrown away and be like, oh, okay, that's season five's like kind of funny thing that we're continuing.
Yeah.
I hope we see something of a premiere or something. Because that's, I mean, she can get the dress.
Oh, the dress that she was wearing last season with the and he says, oh, those are the shoes, and she's like, no, of course not, shoes later. Yeah. And jewels. Johnny's like, what?
Exactly. If they got that Interflix money, baby, she can get the dress.
Interflix money. Okay, anything else about this episode before we jump into our ratings?
Just Alexis and the whole her expectations for a flight, like, oh no, they'll give me the slippers when they give the add up the mimosas, and Stevie just being like, how long has it been since you've taken economy, and she's like, like, she's just never taken economy in her life.
Yeah, so I love Alexis funny. Saying, do they not let you check in on economy? She has no idea. Also, I just need to add, Alexis's hair and entire outfit this episode, I was living for. I think it's very cute. The little top knot, I adored it.
I would say if like you picture Alexis, this is like the kind of like stereotypical look for her, really, isn't it?
That's, yeah,
just, like, the hair and everything like that. It was so funny though how erratic she looked at the beginning when she was trying to like pack all the cases, and Johnny was like, you still haven't got it closed? And it's like, she's been trying for that long.
Girl better weigh her suitcases, because if she can't get that shit closed, there's no way it's under 60 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Maybe
it's even worse in Europe, let me just say, like, in terms of, they're way stricter over there in terms of carry-ons and stuff. So
yeah,
they make you wear the carry-on.
I think maybe Alexis is taking advantage of the fact that she's got so much more room in her luggage now that she's not being a drug spiel. So like, she's like, oh, I can pack all of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. All right. Well, let's get into our ratings here. I think this is kind of a tough one. I don't know.
Really?
Oh, you disagree. Okay. So who do you think is simply the best?
I thought Patrick was lovely. Like going along with a lot of stuff. He was a really good mediator, made a really lovely and kind of sweet suggestion about like the wedding venue, like where to go and like kind of picking up on that, but also was just willing to get Alexis a cab when the like car broke down.
Yeah,
I was like, he's just a good egg in this episode. Didn't do anything to annoy me. So it's like
he's a very good egg. He was definitely up there as one of my options. I do think I am going to choose someone different than Patrick. Although I do think does deserve it.
Are you only not going with Patrick because he wore green?
Would never hold. Please, the tight pants more than made up for that. We're fine. When the donk is donking that hard, it's not. He doesn't need to be wearing blue.
Yeah. Also, yeah. That's for my justifications. Donk was donking like that.
That's another reason. Yes, unspoken. We all just know. No, I'm gonna give my point to Johnny, and the reason is,
oh yeah,
he is so supremely supportive of Moira. Like, the amount of whiplash he must be going through on a day-to-day basis with Moira. Like, he is so kind to her. Like, he's never once like, Moira, get out of the closet. Like, get it together. He is so over the top kind to her. Like, I could never have the patience that he does for Moira. He's a saint.
He really is. Like, the way in which he just accepts it and is like, oh, look who's come to visit you. Like, as if he's been dealing with this, like, and been such a, like, gentle parent like this whole time with Moira. So weird. He's got so much more patience than I would ever have. I'd be shouting at her, like, I'd be starting a fire to get her out of there.
Okay, so for a disgruntled pelican, I personally feel like the only people I want to give it to aren't in the main cast. like, and if I was forced to pick someone from the main cast, it would be Roland for starting a fire, which I don't think you would be happy about because it was an accident. I feel like my top two suspects here are very obviously the cop, because he was breaking the law and sucks in general. And my other option is freaking Clive, because if he was about to have Patrick and David sign a contract to have their wedding at this venue without telling them about the squealing pigs, that is horrible. And I don't know if that was his plan, but also he doesn't own a car because he's afraid of like car horn noises or something. Like, what is wrong with Clive? Also, put your pricing online, you douche.
So you're going with...
I am going with Clive. The more I talk about him, the more...
So this establishment that we've, like, this baseline that we've established, which is that the only exceptions that we really allow kind of one-offs to appear in is if they're, like, big-name things to do with the episode, like Sebastian Rain or the Taylors. You're going against that, and you're going with Clive.
Well, because we've...
Just want confirmation. It's all I need.
I think so. We've given them to, like, Moira's sister before, Dee Dee. Like, we've given them to, like, Jake and Amir and stuff. I just personally feel like what Clive did, like, really sucks overall. And so much so that, like, I just have, like, wedding planning trauma, okay? Like, it is, what he's done is not okay. And also, why are you afraid of car horns? Like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay?
So Clive is perfectly allowed. Fantastic. Because I completely agree and was going to ask if we could. He's outrageous. Put your, like, tell people your prices. Be transparent about this. Can you imagine if they had had their wedding and this didn't come up? And all of a sudden, do you take this donk that donks as your lawfully wedded husband? And then all of a sudden you just hear, like, no, cannot be done. Get in the bin. Clive, this is outrageous. And I think that it speaks to a high degree of, like, how much you've earned this, that there was a cop who was copping too hard.
That's what I'm saying. The fact that there was a cop in this episode and I'm not giving him my disgruntled pelican points, that's how bad you are, Clive. Because you know I hate cops.
Yeah. Wedding venue hosts are the worst.
They really are. Also, you also
listening, host weddings, you're the worst. I'm telling you.
Unless you disclose your pricing. No, listen. Also, he's a bit of a pompous douchebag. When he when they walk in and he's like, oh, sorry if the smell of the peonies is overwhelming. They blossom. I was like, stop it. Stop. Don't do that. That's so annoying. Ugh.
Mm.
People like that make me gaggy. Like, I really can't with the people who are just, like, so posh, uppity assholes. I just don't have time for it. The bronze packaging, the silver packaging. Oh, no, of course we don't have copper.
I hate it. Really funny, though. Like, do we have a winner? And it's like, we have a winner. Like,
I did. We have a winner, Clive. I do love that line in particular. We have a winner, Clive. That's the only reason I remember his name. Oh, my gosh. Okay, we already discussed it for the most part, but I need to put it back up on my screen. Yeah. Moira's wig. It's incredible.
Never going to be angry to look at this again. It's fantastic. Even her face in this whole picture is just so funny.
It might be my favorite.
She's got all
wig.
The wigs in her lap.
I see a pink one. I see the green one she's worn in the past, that red one. I need to see that pink one. Have we seen her wear that one?
I don't know. Recall the pink one. No.
More color, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to see color on Moira's head.
Yeah. Less of these boring, just brown wigs that she was wearing like two seasons ago.
Yeah. Oh, I will say, after she has this meltdown and her and Johnny are walking by the creek, she looked stunning. Like, I think it was
saying the same thing. Like, the lip was just so
reddest,
well,
like fire engine red. Her hair was so gorgeous. The outfit was so nice. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, she always looks incredible, but like something about that specific scene, maybe it was like very ethereal almost because she was in the forest as well.
I think, yeah, it was like the light little kind of like dressing that she kind of had on with the little like brolly that she had as well. Like,
yeah,
like,
oh, the Beetlejuice umbrella.
Mm-hmm. It was like, it was a vibe. It was a really kind of like, it was a good look.
Yeah. Oh, she had a parasol.
A parasol.
That's what fancy people call umbrellas.
Yeah, we don't like posh people, but parasol.
Do they call it a parasol over there? Or do they call it a
I don't know. Just the way we're saying it, just sounds very posh.
Parasol. It does sound posh. It does. Well, it feels like something British people would be like, oh, I have to have my parasol just in case it rains.
Nah, you got your brolly in case it rains. That's all I like.
Brolly? Wow.
Brolly. Yeah.
Incredible. You will do anything to shorten a word over there. Okay. Yeah. It's time. Our first one of the season. It's time to tier rank the episode as always. Our tiers are as follows. Hot shit, faux bouquet, love that journey for me. You, David, and shit, out of luck. Look at us. We have like a nice little orange palette going on.
Mm-hmm. So, changing it up each season.
Love it.
My thoughts are this is, as we discussed, like in terms of like ranking against other season openers, it's kind of mid. I think it's a good episode. So I'm thinking somewhere kind of mid. I think like bang in the middle. Love that journey for me. Love that journey for you.
Yeah. I do mostly agree. I think like if I think I would either put end of bottom of full bouquet, top of love that journey for me. Cause I do think like there's a lot. There's things I always remember about this, the wedding venue, then looking at the wedding venue is like very, there's a lot of actually different locations in this episode than there usually there are, is. Right? We have the creek, which we've never been to, which is very funny. We don't even see water, which is even funnier. And the wedding venue, like two very different new locations. But yeah, I'm well, happy with
Interflix love that. Budget, like Interflix is just
Interflix is really, money. Also I love that the graphic that you chose for this is Patrick in his little green shirt. Look at him.
Now you're coming over to the green.
I mean, I'm still, listen, always blue in my heart. The problem is you can't see the donk here, but just know people, the donk was donking so hard this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think this is a perfect spot for this episode.
Yeah. Sets the bar. Nice, acceptable, great episode of TV.
Mm-hmm.
Only up from here.
Yeah.
Love that journey for me.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Okay. Now, next week, Stuart, are you ready to hear the episode title?
Mm-hmm. Hit me.
Season 6, episode 2, The Incident.
What is with these vague ass titles? Like, of course, like with context, it makes sense. How am I meant to guess what this is? An incident could be anything.
Okay, who does the incident involve?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Whose hand gets chopped off?
Gwen's. What could it be? Like, what is going to warrant, like, an incident? Like, it feels something quite, like, officious and businessy, which makes me think it's something Johnny or motel related, maybe. Like, it's an incident at the motel. Maybe they've got to, like, clear something up or something like that. I'm leaning that or town council.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be like David Patrick related or Alexis related. So yeah, I think one of those two options potentially. I'm leaning more towards motel though.
Okay. So that will be next week. The incident also happening next week is we're going to be recording a podcast about A Mighty Wind, the film.
Mighty Wind.
So if you have any feedback or any questions for us on that, make sure you send those in. Talking shit everywhere. Also podcast.talkingshit.com. No G on talking. So if you want to send us in any feedback or anything like that, make sure to get it in before next Thursday, the 24th.
Yes. And do the same for like these episodes as well. Like some of our favorite things is like getting your feedback on any of the episodes. And also just a reminder, if you leave a 5-star review, Jess will read every single word.
I have
to. You can put words in her mouth and she'll just read them. It's fantastic.
Make me look like an idiot, people. You can do it.
But yeah, you've only got a limited amount of time because we're on the last season.
I know. I'm just now remembering. We definitely saw Moira wear a pink wig, but I don't think it was that pink wig because she wore the pink wig that is like the one that I have still right next
Why
to my desk.
Why is that still within arm's reach of you?
But that I feel like the one we just... Rule. I hope everyone's watching the YouTube video. I could put it. Would you like me to put it on my hand and pretend it's a puppet? Because I could do that.
No, I really wouldn't, Jess. No. Shockingly,
I can't even find the inside of it. Wigs are confusing. How does Moira do this every day? Truly. Oh, I found it. Okay. Yeah. It kind of looks like Cousin It. anyway.
Shit.
So next week we're going to be covering the incident. In the meantime, that's where you can find me. Also on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. We are finishing up Felicity. Thank God, because season 4 is a trip. And season 4 Buffy we're almost done with. And let me tell you, my favorite season so far. I love season 4 Buffy. It's been great.
Season 4 Buffy's a good Buffy.
What are your thoughts on Riley, Stuart? Great.
This is the thing. Like, Riley's like... This era of Buffy's good Buffy, but Riley is not like...
What's your problem with Riley? I just need to know. Just so I can talk to Sarah about it.
He's not other characters. Like, there are better characters.
How do you feel about Tara?
I like Tara.
And how do you feel about Anya?
Love Anya.
Okay, best. Great. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm mostly in line with you. I think Riley is pretty boring. Yeah. Sarah loves him. Sarah is in love with Riley. She adores him. Ruffy is like her favorite couple.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know what that says about Sarah. I might have to shout at her.
I don't know. But anyway, so I still have the witch on my hand if you're watching the video or not watching the video, I guess. So we'll be back next week with season 6, episode 2. And until then, everyone, warmest regards.
And best wishes.